Welcome back. Welcome back to Talk of the Town. You know it, you love it, the theme song from Law & Order. And you know, anytime you hear that, that's our law correspondent, the Honorable District Court Judge for the 1st Judicial District here in Caddo Parish, Scott Creighton. Judge Scott Creighton, for a minute there, I had a moment, because you were not in your robe. You weren't in your Batman suit.
Well, I'm robeless today. I'm derobed, but I'm here to talk about the law and whatever questions you have for me on the Supreme Court, the United States Supreme Court, and the retiring Justice John Paul Stevens.
And you must understand that we are actually on the road again today, this time in Judge Scott Creighton's courtroom. And you'll see from some of the pictures what it kind of looks like whenever we do this. And I called you up and I said, wow, here it was. In fact, you and I talked about it about a year ago, that Justice John Paul Stevens and Ruth Bader Ginsburg would be the two justices most likely to retire, and Obama could have a triumvirate that he could theoretically replace on the Supreme Court.
Well, I think he's on his way on the trilogy here, at least. I believe that, of course, we had Justice Sotomayor recently confirmed, and Tom, the sweetest words known to man, I told you so, or maybe you told me so, I can't remember which.
I think we both said it.
We both kind of stumbled upon Justice Sotomayor very soon, very, very soon after she was nominated, before she was confirmed. She seemed to be the lead candidate, and sure enough, we were right. And the first Hispanic justice of the United States Supreme Court. And of course, Justice Ginsburg, Ruth Bader Ginsburg, has had problems with some cancer, but she's hanging in there. Justice John Paul Stevens, on April the 9th, sent a letter to President Obama indicating that he would retire. In fact, I have a copy of it here. It says, "My dear Mr. President, having concluded that it would be in the best interest of the court to have my successor appointed and confirmed well in advance of the commencement of the court's next term, I shall retire from regular active service as an associate justice, effective the next day after the court rises for summer recess this year."
And when would that be?
That would be sometime summer recess. I think that's basically whenever they finish all of their opinions that on cases that they heard.
Is this an October thing, September, October?
Basically, the summer recess is in the summer. And
they reconvene.
They reconvene formally perhaps the first Monday in October, upon which they hear oral arguments in various cases that have been docketed.
Well, now, here it is, and again, the talk of the town on the road today, Tom Pace with the Honorable Judge Scott Creighton, our law correspondent, and we have talked everything from Michael Jackson on down. But today is a big one, the Supreme Court and the makeup. First off, John Paul Stevens, 89, is he about to be 90?
He is pushing 90 years old. He'll be 90 in just a few days. He's the fourth longest serving justice of the United States Supreme Court, and he's the second oldest justice in the court's history. I think William Douglas was perhaps the oldest, and actually he got along in years and had some health problems, but he hung in there.
And one of the things about your Supreme Court justices, they are appointed for life, correct?
That is set forth in the United States Constitution. They are appointed for life, and I think the rationale of our founding fathers in that respect was to have justices appointed for life that are immune from politics. They should be very able and competent and smart men and women who will interpret and apply the law as written, hopefully as written. And they are to be, we're trying to insulate them from political pressure.
Come on now. Did you see what happened when Obama made his State of the Union address and he chastised the court on their ruling and immune from politics?
I did see that. And actually, that's raised an issue about whether the United States Supreme Court justices should even be there in the first place, because in this instance, President Obama criticized a ruling. And I believe it was Justice Alito that shook his head with a bit of an attitude, I might add. But
Obama certainly was no Boy Scout. Now,
no,
I'm going to tell you, when he chastised him.
Well, that's correct, and it's my view that the president should not be in the business of criticizing the United States Supreme Court, nor should the Supreme Court justices be in the position of a contentious image at a State of the Union
And I understand they're even considering this as we speak, whether or not they want to attend the next one.
I think that's right, and there are reasons not to be there. They really do need to try to maintain their independence. That's the whole point of this. I'm not suggesting that it's a great idea to have life appointments, but I understand the theory and the rationale of the Founding Fathers with regard to federal court appointments, lifetime appointments.
Now, all right. And again, so we're talking about Justice John Paul Stevens. We know he's an old guy, and he said, okay, I'm going to let you, because he realizes that he being a liberal, Obama will get to replace him with that. What's the current makeup of the court?
Well, there are about five Republicans, four Democrats, as I recall, four conservatives, four in the conservative wing, four in the liberal wing, with Justice Kennedy being the swing vote.
How old is Kennedy, by the way? Is he in his 60s?
I think he's in his late 50s. I'm not sure. Probably 59 or 60. But, you know, John Paul Stevens was appointed by Gerald Ford, Republican president, and Stevens either was or is, maybe still is, a Republican. But he's sort of been deemed to be the leader of the liberal quartet on the nine-member court. He's been called the unexpected liberal because, again, he's appointed by a Republican president. And
he was supposed to be conservative.
Supposed to be conservative. And actually, he had appellate court experience in which he seemed to be fairly conservative in his rulings. He was originally appointed by Richard Nixon to one of the federal appeals courts. But anyway, he's been the unexpected liberal, but he's been graceful.
You're talking about Justice Kennedy.
No, I'm sorry, Tom. Maybe I drifted off there. I'm back on retiring Justice John Paul Stevens, appointed by Gerald Ford in 1975, and he's been there ever since. But John Paul Stevens is really the leader of, as I said, the liberal quartet on the nine-member court. Kennedy is a swing vote, typically, on these hot-button controversial cases.
Now, again, with Caddo District Court Judge Scott Creighton actually in his courtroom today, sans bailiff and all of the, you know, the plaintiffs and defendants and everything.
And we have no jury to evaluate our you know, position here.
Well, this is one of the few times you get to be judge and jury.
That's right. Okay, thank you. I like that.
All right. Now, let's get right down to it, because we know the Republicans are immediately coming out saying, we're going to challenge your appointment, but I think they could play nice together if it met some of their criteria. Who are some of the names?
Some of the names that I have read about include Merrick Garland. He's age 57. He is on one of the D.C. appellate courts. And again, we're talking, Tom, about the upcoming 112th Justice of the United States Supreme Court. Merrick, one thing that may be to his detriment is he's 57. A president wants to appoint a man or woman who is fairly young because, as evidenced by Justice John Paul Stevens, the longevity is important. Well, perhaps not in terms of the way Gerald Ford might remember John Paul Stevens if he was here to remember him.
But that's the president's legacy.
That's the president's legacy, and these justices will outlast these presidents by as much as a decade or two, typically. So there's always this inclination to appoint someone fairly young, not too young, but in, you know, 50 or so. In fact, Chief Justice Roberts, appointed by President George W. Bush, was in his early 50s when he was.
Well, now Merrick is 57, so.
Well, not bad. But then there's Elena Kagan. She's been talked about. She's age 49. That's a little bit better.
And wait, when you're talking about younger, you mean like 49, 50?
Yes. Can you imagine that?
No.
That's younger than you are. Oh,
that's exactly right, ladies and gentlemen, and I'm proud to be at 63.
And you don't look a day over 63.
Yeah, thank you. back on point now, and the possible appointees to replace John Paul Stevens on the U.S. Supreme Court, we've talked about Merrick Garland.
Well, let me say this about Merrick Garland. He is probably the most appealing to Republicans. Now, of course, he's a Democrat, but what makes him appealing is that not only has he got the educational credentials, he graduated from Harvard with in 1974, summa cum laude, and he also graduated from Harvard Law School. He slipped to magna cum laude
in
1977. But he's a former prosecutor, a former United States attorney, prosecuting for the District of Columbia. And he's had an interesting history. And he is now on, as I said, the Washington, one of the D.C. Federal courts of appeal. But he's viewed as a
moderate liberal, maybe?
Well, kind of a version of John Roberts in a way, I guess. But he is the most appealing to conservatives because of that previous prosecutorial experience, and his rulings have been fairly conservative.
What about the woman?
Well, Lena Kagan is now all the ones that I'm going to mention were all interviewed along with Justice Sotomayor just a year or two ago, but she's a Harvard Law School dean, and she has been credited with bringing some conservative professors to Harvard. Can you imagine conservative professors at Harvard?
Well, there's
Tom?
A whole, that's an oxymoron almost.
But
like small shrimp,
you know,
big shrimp.
Some of the Democrats may not like that. I don't know. It just depends on where your ideology is.
Here's the deal, though. Where is she on the abortion issue?
Well, she has on abortion. I think she has favored abortion. She has also written some articles, perhaps a case, with respect to favoring same-sex marriage. I believe that would be a strong issue with Republicans.
Oh, they'd be all over that.
Her educational credentials are very good. She graduated from Princeton. She graduated from Harvard Law School. And she clerked for Justice Thurgood Marshall. Now, several of these people that I've read about after law school, and mainly Ivy League law schools, and that's another point we may want to get to in a minute, they clerked for Supreme Court justices immediately following their law school degrees. And that's always a good thing. Those jobs are hard to get. You really have to be a graduate of Harvard or Georgetown or one of those upper-level tiered schools, Stanford, Yale, to be hired by the United States Supreme Court as a law clerk.
Yeah, put that on your resume.
Not a bad thing to have on your resume.
Okay, now, is there another woman that could be in the lurking?
There is another woman. Her name is Diane Wood. She is on the Seventh Circuit Court of Appeal. Again, another federal appellate court judge. She does have a history. She's considered by the commentators to be the most liberal. I think she would probably stir up the most conservative opposition. And I think there would probably be some fierce opposition. She is noted to be fairly strong in the pro-abortion arena, and I think that that would lead us to a fairly bloody battle with respect to
showdown at the U.S. Supreme Court and the Congress.
I'm not so sure this is a fight that President Obama wants to take on. Now, I will say this: I noted that Diane Wood taught at University of Chicago Law School and was a colleague to President Obama. So there's that history that they have as colleagues, and that may be a big plus.
And what about her age?
She is 59, so she is along the same in line with Merrick. Actually, she's 2 years older than Merrick Garland. So Alina Kagan is the youngest out of those three.
Now, these are and ladies and gentlemen, as you understand, as Judge Creighton and I are discussing this, possible nominees to the Supreme Court. This is in no way etched in stone. However, these tend to be the top three, and there are others. Is that right?
There are others, and a few of those include
Sidney Thomas. Huh?
Sidney Thomas, who's a 14th year judge on the Ninth Circuit Court of Appeal. Now, the Ninth Circuit Federal Court of Appeal is deemed to be the most liberal federal court of appeal out there. Okay, so that's going to be an issue, I suspect. If he was to be nominated by President Obama during the Senate confirmation hearings. There is Elizabeth Warren. She heads the oversight, the Congressional Oversight Panel. Eric Holder, Attorney General, has been talked about. Even Hillary Clinton. Now, let's not forget.
Oh, that was one of the things that was talked about at the very beginning of Hillary accepting the Secretary of State's position. Would somewhere along the line, would she be touted and or nominated for Supreme Court? Now, here's the question, Judge. Would she face opposition? Would she be currying favor with both sides?
Well, of course, she's a former U.S. Senator. That's interesting. But President Obama has said that she is, quote, doing a good job as Secretary of State, and he wants her to stay in that position. Now, having said that, let's take note that a U.S. Supreme Court justice, again, is appointed for life. So what is he really telling us? Couldn't he replace Hillary Clinton as Secretary of State and nominate her to the Supreme Court where she would have a lifetime appointment? Now, one aspect about that is that that would guarantee that she would not run against him next time. Just because she's Secretary of State now doesn't mean that she can't resign that post and run against President Obama in the next election. So those are things to think about, and I believe that President Obama is a smart guy, and he's considered all that. But he has said that Hillary Clinton is doing a good job, and she should stay where she is.
Okay, there we got it. Okay, now what about Janet Napolitano? And I don't think there's a lot of love there for that woman.
I don't think so. I'm trying to practice saying her name.
Napolitano.
Napolitano. I learned Sotomayor.
That's right.
I learned that. But Janet is Homeland Security Secretary, and she's a contender. There's also Deval Patrick, who is a Massachusetts governor. He's African American. He's the only one out of the list of a number of contenders who's African American. Now let's review the makeup of the Supreme Court. We have Clarence Thomas, African American. He's the only African American out of the nine. And I'm not sure how this profile enters into all this business, but I mean I know it's been talked about.
Well, it's interesting to put it in layman's terms. So we who are not involved in the legal profession and getting up there into law, that we can at least get an idea. Right now there's two women and Clarence Thomas is the only black.
That's right. So there's seven men and two women. Sandra Day O'Connor retired, and we have Justice Ginsburg, and we have the new Justice Sotomayor, and the rest are men. Clarence Thomas is the only African American on the court. So some questions that have been raised are as follows. This business of religion. Okay, well, there it just so happens there are six Catholics, six Catholic justices, two Jewish justices. That raises the question of among some of the commentators. That would be me and you, commentators.
Yeah, yeah. Or as opposed to special taters, where you put the bacon and the cheese on.
I really like special taters, particularly at Ernest, for example.
They make some
really good special
really
taters.
Really good taters. Yeah. But for commentator purposes, the makeup.
Well, should he appoint a Protestant? I mean, another issue is should he appoint another woman? We only have two women. We have seven men. Does that seem right? Shouldn't we have that a little bit more equal? Does it really matter? Should he appoint somebody not from an Ivy League college? I mean, do we really need graduates from Harvard, Stanford, and Yale deciding policy for the whole country? Should we have instead perhaps someone, of course, has to be a lawyer and good standing and competent and great credentials, but should that person be perhaps one with a more diverse field, not necessarily previously on a federal court of appeal, but perhaps a business lawyer from who's done trench work in litigation and courtrooms across the country, someone of that nature.
And didn't President Obama kind of make a comment about that, if I remember correctly?
He did. And what he said was, he said basically, I will, and this is a quote, Tom, I'm prepared. I want you to know I actually got on the Internet and reviewed some of this stuff like I am inclined to do.
Never prepared. Right.
Well,
he is the most prepared judge. You should see him all prepared today.
I don't want to just speak randomly about this and that. I want to actually talk about, I want to be precise as I can. Anyway, yeah. President Obama did say, it will also be someone who, like Justice Stevens, knows that in democracy, powerful interests must not be allowed to drown out the voices of ordinary citizens. That's his quote. Those are his words.
That is President Barack Obama's words.
President Obama's words. And so he's talking about voices of ordinary citizens. Is he signaling to us that this person, this nominee, is going to be someone that we might consider more of an ordinary citizen, not necessarily an Ivy League educated, Princeton and Harvard undergrad and law school grad person? So the signal is that it may be someone with a little bit more diversity.
And it might not be one of these top three.
It might not
he
be.
Might pull the proverbial rabbit out of the hat.
Well, he could, although he needs to act pretty fast. And the advantage that he has is he's interviewed most of these people when he interviewed Sotomayor. So he's got a lead on a short list. And I suspect it's probably going to be some of the people we mentioned, that being Merrick Garland, Elena Kagan, Diane Wood, perhaps Napolitano. Did I do okay on that?
You did good.
Or Deval Patrick, a good friend. But Governor Patrick has indicated that he's going to run again for governor.
Yeah, but here's the whole thing. And again, Judge Scott Creighton, a Caddo District Court judge with Tom Pace on the road, we're inside his courtroom today. You'll see that picture a little bit later. Here's the thing. You say the Constitution says keep politics out of it, but this is one of the most political appointments a president can make.
Absolutely.
And right now, with public opinion of Obama, health care, and everything, he's trying to appease the Republicans as well as his own party.
Well, that's right. And he's just completed a fairly tough battle on health care. And again, we need to remember this is an election year for a number of members of Congress, and do the Democratic senators want to rehitch their wagon to President Obama in this election year? Do they really want to have a fight that will be televised for all to see?
And by the way, these confirmation hearings are televised.
They are, and they're most interesting.
That's a Senate deal, isn't it?
It is. It's Senate confirmation, and it takes 51 senators to confirm. And here's the interesting thing about this. You know, with the recent election of Scott Brown from Massachusetts taking over Senator Ted Kennedy's position, that means the Democrats control 59 seats. They need to have 3/5 or 60 votes to overcome a filibuster. So if the Republicans mount a filibuster, and quite frankly, I'm not sure what all is involved in the mechanics of that.
They just talk a lot.
You'll have to ask David Vitter about filibusters. I don't know anything about filibusters.
And you brought that up. That's interesting. I did ask him about the possible makeup of the midterm elections, and he indicated he thought there could be as many as 10 senators that could go Republican.
That's interesting. That's interesting. You can ask him, though, about the filibuster business, because they just happen to have the Democrats just happen to have 59 seats. And just to make this interesting, it takes 3/5 of the Senate or 60 members to overcome a filibuster by Republicans. So the Democrats are a little bit emboldened by the health care vote and how that turned out.
And they're mad, too.
The Republicans are mad, okay?
Well, the Democrats are mad.
Everybody's mad. Everybody's mad. But it makes for an interesting dialogue, and I just hope it's not embarrassing. You know, I remember a number of, in my lifetime, a number of Senate confirmation hearings, most notably Clarence Thomas. And that was a very tough
now,
confirmation.
Who pushed him through again?
Well, he was nominated by President H.W. Bush and Republican African American Daddy Bush. Mm-hmm. Bush 1, not Bush 2. Of course, the presidents Bush have a number of justices on the Supreme Court. Most recently, Roberts, Chief Justice Roberts, appointed by George W. Bush, Bush
II. Was he fly fishing whenever he got the word?
Or I was think that, so. What a way to get the word.
He was fly fishing, and they couldn't even reach him by cell phone. He was out on the river, and couldn't. Somebody had to drive up. Hey, guess what? Hey, the president wants you to be.
Well, that's pretty good news. That's better than catching fish. But anyway, this is going to be an interesting issue for President Obama, because in this election year for some congressional people, is he willing to expend and exercise all of his political capital, whatever he has left? And I think he has plenty. But does he want to expend all that at this point in time? And what are the pluses and what are the minuses? It may be that an easier nominee might not be Diane Wood, who has some issues, as we might say, but a nominee might be Merrick Garland, who I think would sail through, or perhaps that interim person kind of in the middle might be Elena Kagan. So we'll see. Stay tuned.
Okay, stay tuned, and we'll be back in a minute. But final thought about this. Would it not be on the diversity issue, a higher profile, for a woman or a black to go onto the court?
I think that on the diversity issue, that is something that President Obama, I believe, considers to be a big point.
So look at Sotomayor.
Sotomayor is the first, as I said, the first Hispanic justice appointed to the United States Supreme Court. And you know, Hispanics are the most increasing minority in this country, and so her voice is important to many Hispanics.
And he curried that vote.
He did. He curried it, and he got it. And of course, she's very well qualified. And what I like about her, in particular, is that she does have a good history, and perhaps a little bit on the liberal side, but on the other hand, she has previous criminal prosecutorial experience. She's worked with police. She's been in the trenches. She's handled real cases involving real victims of crime. And I'm impressed with her, but we'll see. This is going to be an interesting process.
All right, there you heard it from the man who is our legal law correspondent on the Talk of the Town with Tom Pace. Oh, by the way, now streaming live on the World Wide Web on television. It's justin.tv/tpace. And so not only, Your Honor, whenever you come to the studio the next time, we get to hear your choice words, but we will be able to see you and your gracious beard.
Thank you. I look forward to it.
All right. Tom Pace, the Talk of the Town. And don't anybody go away. We're in the judge's courtroom, and we'll be right back.